Good evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today is November 8th. Oh, well, where I am, it's November 9th. Where you are, it's November 8th, 2012. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I'm speaking to you from Amsterdam, or at least the Amsterdam area in Holland. I've been surrounded by physicists and engineers. I'm attending and speaking at the Global Breakthrough Energy Conference. The link to access the live stream will be up on the blog starting tomorrow. The conversations that I've had at dinner and our meetings this evening are again a reminder that the technology is available to radically reduce our health care and our energy costs. It does exist, and there's a lot that scientists and engineers can add that will dramatically add to our general welfare if they're permitted. The question, of course, is working through the political obstacles to this kind of change. More upcoming events. As I said, the live stream for the Breakthrough Energy Conference will be, the link will be accessible through the blog tomorrow. And then I'm flying back to California on Monday and will be giving a financial salon for Changing Times in Santa Cruz. And then December 1st, the subscriber luncheon with the whole Salieri team is going to be in Murfreesboro outside of Nashville. So if you're in the area, you definitely want to come. You can just click on Luncheon with Catherine at the blog and make sure you RSVP. Yes. Tonight, Precious Metals Market Report with Franklin Sanders. There's a lot going on in the market. The gold just surpassed U.S. equity markets in terms of performance for the year. They've been underperforming U.S. equities, and that just reversed just this today. So we've got a lot to talk about. We're going to have slides on the webinar software. You can tell which section we're in from watching the slides, and then the blog, in the subscriber section on the blog, will have all the charts for the precious metals market report. Those won't be in the webinar software. So if you're online, just check out the slide section on the webinar software and keep a browser open for the subscriber section at the blog post on the precious metals market reports. Because Franklin has posted a lot of charts, and I've also posted a chart on mining stocks in response to one of the questions we got. Our theme tonight, Arise When the Storm Passes and Rebuild, that's a line from a blog commentary I wrote about Hurricane Sandy called Yea, Though I Walk Through the Valley of the Shadow of Death. It's short and quick. It's up on the blog. We've had multiple storms that we want to let pass over. We've had Hurricane Sandy. We've had the presidential campaign, which I consider to be quite a storm. And then, of course, the European and the U.S. fiscal cliff. So there's a lot of storms passing by, not to mention that New York and New Jersey and the tri-state area are getting hit by more. Money and markets. I want to start with good news because there's too much depressing going on. The good news is McDonald's sales are down. Yes, it could be the economy, but let's hope Americans are getting smarter and realizing they're not saving money by eating food that's not food. Another piece of very good news is the election is over. The election was a depressing experience. It is every 4 years, as a majority of voters are encouraged and spend way too much time ignoring local elections where they're votes really count, and investing enormous amounts of time and attention and money on the presidential election, only to wake up the next day with a serious case of dread about what's next. And unfortunately, other than the independent candidates, there really wasn't very much discussion on a lot of the real problems that face us, and that's because they're unpleasant to talk about. As Jeb Bush once said, there's no political constituency for fiscal responsibility. The symptoms of voter fraud were quite significant on both sides of the aisle, with the latest report being significant military absentee ballots just mysteriously not arriving in time to be counted. So you know which way the Pentagon goes on this. My read is that Obama won the election in late July at the Bohemian Grove. If you look at both QE3 and the financial aspects of Hurricane Sandy, or those that I believe them to be, and I discussed those last week, these things would have had to be decided with a high-level consensus in the summer. And I think there's several things that won Obama the nod for Mr. Global, or from Mr. Global, which are worth considering. First of all, Obama has done a remarkable job politically of delivering to the Mr. Global everything they want, from drones in the skies to $27+ trillion of bailouts. I mean, they've basically taken the equivalent of our retirement savings and shifted it to the banks in what I've described as a financial coup d'etat. That's an extraordinary political feat, and yet the president still commands enormous political support despite having engineered that. Panetta, DOD, and the Vatican interests behind them are in the catbird seat over sort of running the military complex, so there's no need to rock the boat. A lot's going on. If you turn over the administrations, you lose a lot of time and money, and there's risk from the turnover. So if the current guy's giving you everything you want, why bother to take the risk? With Romney coming in just that period of insecurity, you have the risk of sort of more squabbling and making things more difficult to manage globally. Romney said, no, my interpretation of the effort during the Grove to get Condoleezza Rice on the ticket, I think there was a good faith effort by George Shultz and some of the others to put a brown or black face on the ticket. Now, that would have not been acceptable to the various constituencies that Romney had to keep in the tent. But my guess is that Mr. Global needs a black or brown face on front of the American war machine. Romney's just the wrong face to put on the front of drones going all over the world and now into American skies. It's just too easy for the population to balk, whereas Obama's done a very good job of lulling everybody into complacency. Think of him as the velvet face to the iron fist. I think another telltale sign that occurred at the same time that the Grove happened was a Financial Times poll, and I mentioned this on the Salieri Report, had money managers saying that the markets would do significantly better under Obama. Ultimately, it's several things. It's a style choice. Obama is the original Ninja Turtle, whereas Romney's still sort of in the Lone Ranger style, and I think that style is much more soothing to the electorate. The other thing is it's a color choice. You have white voters declining as a percent of the voting population, but also you have globally, because now, of course, America is an empire, you have a lot more sort of non-white people, and Obama is, as the son of an African American, well, there's debate about that, but certainly African or African American, and his mother was Caucasian. He's seen as the more inclusive choice. Another piece of good news coming out of the election, there's little tidbits here and there. I was shocked to see that Gary Trudeau did a Doonesbury cartoon about the use of entrainment technology and subliminal programming, pointed out to me in the San Francisco, one of the San Francisco papers last week. You have a truck roaming a neighborhood spouting out different stuff for Romney. And then after the group of people sitting in their house criticizing Romney, suddenly they get hit by a beam and can't remember what they were thinking and saying. And I thought, oh my good Lord, has it become acceptable to discuss this in the mainstream? But that is good news. Some more good news. Elizabeth Warren won in Massachusetts, so add one financially sane voice to the U.S. Senate. She's been quite a thorn in the side of the banksters, and they wouldn't. They did everything to stop her being put in charge of the new consumer agency, and because they stopped her, now she's bounced back in the form of a senator. So that'll be a thorn in their side and a good one. California approved Brown's tax plan for schools and said no, unfortunately, to Proposition 37. So GMO labeling has not happened in California, although, as I pointed out on the blog, there's a movement underfoot in India to ban GMOs for 10 years. That'll be interesting to see if that happens. Puerto Rico voted to become a state. That doesn't mean they will become a state, but it's moving them towards statehood. There are a number of nullification victories worth pointing out, some on related to the health care, but some related to legalizing marijuana, with several states voting to legalize marijuana. And if that makes growing hemp easy and legal in those states, that could be wonderful developments for them economically. As I said, the market's response has been very negative, with significant drops since the election. First, you got a bounce and then drops. Gold now just surpassing the U.S. equity markets in terms of performance for the year. Since the gold has been chasing the equity markets, that's a big turn, a big change for the year, and more as we discuss this with Franklin. I want to talk a little bit about what's expected for corporate earnings and what that might mean to employment. Hurricane Sandy, this story is far from over, and experience is far from over. Unfortunately, much more bad weather, snow, winds, a small hurricane in the New York and tri-state area. To give you sort of a disgusting spin on the whole thing, Chris Matthews gave a little speech as to why he was so glad they had a storm and why that was positive for the election. That sort of put it over the top. So I reposted a quote from Defense William Cohen's briefing at DOD. In fact, it's up on the DOD website. I've linked to it on the blog. Let me just read it. In April of 1997, United States Secretary of Defense William S. Cohen said, quote, "Others are engaging in an echo type of terrorism whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes, volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves." He made this statement at a conference on terrorism, weapons of mass destruction, and U.S. strategy in its official capacity as the U.S. Secretary of Defense. Thus, this can be taken as an official, well, I don't agree with that. Further, he used the words are, not could, might, or might someday in the future. He further added, it's real, and that's the reason we have to intensify our efforts. That's linked, the link to the Department of Defense is up on the blog. Now, why do I mention all of this? Because Bloomberg came out for Obama after Hurricane Sandy hit, for a Republican to come out for Obama at that critical juncture is very frightening. You almost wonder if he wasn't worried about what his nanny might do to his, or his son's, or children's nanny might do to their grandchildren. So that was right before the election, and I said last week that that made me very nervous, a big uh-oh about what might be coming with climate change. And then we have Obama hinting in his about his second term, saying that despite lingering partisan gridlock, calling for a future that, quote, isn't threatened by the destructive power of a warming planet. Given that, on top of Bloomberg's statement, made me very nervous. And sure enough, and it's up on the blog, out today comes Bloomberg saying that HSBC is now saying that Obama may levy a carbon tax to cut the U.S. deficit. Let me just read you a quote from it. Barack Obama may consider introducing a tax on carbon emissions to help cut the U.S. budget deficit after winning a second term as president, according to HSBC Holdings, etc. It's up on the blog, and it's one of the reasons that the Republicans continuing to hold the House is very good news, because I assure you what Mr. Global would love is a global tax. And a carbon, think of a carbon tax as a property tax on everything. And I can't think of anything more worth your time and attention to stop and fight. The headlines are turning to the fiscal cliff. We are running in the United States a $1.5 trillion deficit approximately. And really, that's a political problem. It's not an economic problem. I put up another great video from Carl Deniger talking about the healthcare monopolies and how the use of monopolies has driven the cost of medicine up dramatically. I couldn't agree more with those statements. That monopoly problem is existent not just in healthcare, but in defense across the board in many of the different spending items. And you literally have an entire economy locked into old models that have not been optimized for generations. And so how exactly this is going to be evolved is a really big question, but expect very, very significant political problems. Of course, in many respects, this is going to be, I believe, and we'll talk more with Franklin about this, good for gold, because it's one of the few things that can't be printed. One of my favorite commentators sent me, was responding to a question today. I just wanted to read you from his email. The perpetuation of the $649 trillion global derivatives market, particularly as it relates to interest rate swaps, which are all interest rate products, is akin to an apple picker harvesting apples. The notion that the players doing the rigging of interest rates will need additional capital is like saying the people who are doing the picking of apples will somehow become short of apples. This will never happen with interest rates under the status quo, because the more you pick, the more rich in apples you appear to be. More than 80% of aggregate outstanding derivatives are OTC swap contracts. That's interest rate. Precious metals are the Achilles heel. The double-edged sword part of the equation will only manifest itself when the banks and officialdom are concerned, when people demand real physical metal in increasing quantities so as to overwhelm the criminals supplying IOUs. As long as investors are willing to accept ETFs and other paper proxies in lieu of real metal, this will never happen and the charade will go on. Okay, and very good point, because it's one of the few places within the financial system where there's real accountability back to something physical. A comment on employment right before the election, not surprisingly, the Labor Department delivered, quote, good news on employment. That caused me to post John Williams' latest update on unemployment charts. From everything I see in the economy, unemployment's a real problem, and it's going to get worse because the pressure, the market is delivering a real pressure onto corporations to shore up their earnings, which are projected to head down. How are they going to do that? By laying people off, by outsourcing more. So around and around we go. But take a look, because that's a much more realistic count on unemployment. For those of you who don't know John Williams and Shadow Stats, we did a great interview with him. It's in the archive. Just one note on science and technology. The article has gone off the front page of the blog, but if you click back, you can find it. It's a story of Ethiopian kids. A project called One Laptop Per Child decided that they would take Motorola Zoom tablets, their tablet PCs, and they would deliver them in boxes to an Ethiopian village where people didn't speak English. The kids didn't speak English and had absolutely no training. Not only would they deliver them, but they left them in their boxes. So the kids had to open them, figure out what they were, figure out how to get them going, figure out how to speak English, and then figure out sort of how they worked. And apparently they did it so well and so quickly that within 5 months, not only had they learned English sufficient to use them, but in fact to circumvent the security on the operating system so that they could customize settings and activate disabled hardware. It makes you realize, whoa. Okay, so let me just shift to hero. Our hero this week is Buzz Aldrin. He had an article in the MIT Technology Review, one of my favorite magazines for keeping track of technology. It was called The Imperative to Explore, but his great quote on the front of the cover was, they promised us colonies on Mars, and instead we got Facebook. Buzz Aldrin, of course, was an astronaut who was one of the first to walk on the moon, but a reminder that technology should give us the tools to aspire to great and strategic goals, as opposed to making money on stupid, well, I don't want to say anything nasty, but I'll say it, it's stupid little things. Anyway, we have tremendous questions, lots and lots of questions for which we're going to dive into, but I want Franklin's help on some of them. So I'm going to move the Ask Catherine section into our interview. And with no further ado, Franklin Sanders, are you with us?
I'm right here.
Well, you've had a busy, busy day.
I've been rode hard and put away well.
I was just going to say that.
Everybody in the world wants to buy gold and silver now.
Yep.
And well, it's a lot of people. You know, it's people who I've never talked to before, and they're just thoroughly dispirited by the election. About, you know, most of the ones I talked to today that were new said, I got to do something. So I guess they thought nothing's going to change. I don't know. But
now, was this the first time they had bought gold and silver?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. These
really?
People coming in. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, altogether new people. So something's going on, clearly.
We'll bring us up. Let's start where we were last month and tell us what's been going on and just walk us through what the market did on the election.
Can I go back farther than that?
Absolutely.
First of all, I want to talk about the U.S. dollar, okay? Because I think that you, if you don't know about that, you won't altogether be able to appreciate what's going on. Contrary to expectations, the QE3 and all that stuff, the dollar reached its low in September, and it's been rising ever since. Now, it hasn't been rising fast, but in the last 4 days, it's gotten over its 200-day moving average, which for a market in a bear trend, that is a primary downtrend, is a rally. And it's fair to go to, 82. The interesting thing is that hasn't slowed down gold at all. It's also interesting and shows you exactly how irrational markets can be that the dollar rose on Obama's election. And
well, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Well, it may not surprise
that makes you complete me, sense to me.
You know, he's a vote for inflation. There's no question about that. Not that Romney was not, but he's anyway. In any event, the dollar has continued to rally slowly, very slowly, but it is in an uptrend. Didn't bother gold and silver a bit. But let me go back to let's look back for about 18 months at gold and silver, and remember that a year ago in September, we got this huge peak over $1,900. Actually, the close was like 1880. And then it went into this long downtrend and formed a big, long, falling triangle or falling wedge. And we've spent all the rest of the time rocketing back and forth between 1800 and 1525. And it's been miserable. Only in August did gold finally break out of that pattern, rally again to 1800, very strongly rallied from 1800 up to 1800, and then about the 1st of October began a correction. And so that's kind of where we are. We've broken the big downtrend that was of the correction that had been going on for so long. And then now we've gotten to this we broke out over the downtrend line, went back and sort of made a final kiss goodbye towards the downtrend line, almost went down to the 200-day moving average, and which is a frequent target of a bull market correction, and then just shot back up back through the downtrend line, and today closed through the 20-day moving average. It's almost over the 50-day moving average. And what this promises to be is a very, very strong, long-lived rally that will just slice through $1,800 and never slow down. That may go sideways for another week or 2 weeks, but there's a lot of power coming up underneath this. Silver has done basically the same thing. And by the way, gold in euros has made a kind of similar pattern, but gold in euros has turned back up too and broken up through its downtrend line. So doesn't matter what look at it in, gold is rising against all currencies.
Let me just ask you a question. Now, clearly, I feel very confident in precious metals here, but I also know that the wrangling around the fiscal cliff could put us in a position where we get tremendous volatility and moments when to sort of protect the equity markets and ultimately the bond market, there'll be a real effort to sort of manage that rise. So, I agree that there's tremendous strength underneath it, but I also think over the next 18 months we could also see tremendous volatility. So if you look at 2008,
I don't doubt the volatility, but I think that the fiscal cliff will be basically a non-event. They will push it off. They will argue. They will kick up dust and sand and ruffle their feathers in front of the TV cameras. But in the end, they won't do anything. and they'll push it, kick it down the road another 6 months or another year, whatever it is, even though you're right, it could very much contribute to the volatility. Still, for all that, I have to say that if gold just performs minimally as it has in the past and less than I think it should, by June it ought to reach $2,300. And that's just based on past performance in the first wave up, which is not the strongest moving wave. It's not the most rapidly rising wave. Now, you know, I mean, I could get my head handed to me on a platter, but that's what I see from right here. And, of course they try to whack gold and silver, and they try to whack it, especially when it's been rising a long time, and that tends to make a market weak and ready for a correction. And that's the time they tend to jump on. And they haven't stopped.
Well, you're much more of an optimist than I am, but I hope you're right and I'm wrong.
Well, I don't think next year is going to be pretty.
I don't disagree that they're going to kick the can, but I do think they're going to hit, you know, that the net result of whatever they do is going to hit the average household by about $2,000 or $3,000 a year at a minimum, and that's not including what the debasement is doing to inflation. So the net to each family's, you know, income statement is going to be ugly.
Now, no doubt that's true, and the unemployment is going to increase, and the government will become even more contemptible in the eyes of most of the people than it is today. I mean, surely they've got to start thinking somebody's lying here when all those unemployment figures just suddenly turned up right there before the election. How can you help it?
Well, I think most people, you know, it's funny, at dinner tonight, somebody pointed out that in 2007, according to a New York Times poll, 84% of New Yorkers didn't believe the official story on the election. I mean, on 9/11. And, you know, if you look at the polls, I think the question for most people is, what do I do? You know, so I think they... That's really where it comes down to. What's my action? What do I do? And I say that yet, and I'm still stunned at the extraordinary time and money that was spent tracking the presidential election and not tracking the state and local elections, because a lot of the impact that comes through on the fiscal cliff is going to come through state and local. So if you have the wrong people in state and local, you're really in trouble.
Well, state and local governments can't print their own money. They're just like Greece and Spain. They have to come up
right.
with the money. And that makes them much more vulnerable than the federal government. So, you know, I mean, I've argued with people and tried to explain to them, when Cheney says the debt doesn't make any difference, he's absolutely right from their standpoint. They'll just print
right.
more money. They can just keep on doing that forever. They've been doing it since 1913. Goodness gracious, 99 years. Don't tell them it doesn't work.
Well, Franklin, tell us about the silver chart. How does silver look versus gold? Which do you think is more attractive right now?
Whenever you get these corrections, you know that silver falls faster than gold. So the gold silver ratio rose to a little over 54, and that's wonderful. You know, there was a gap in the chart there. That's the kind of thing that chart watchers love to see. And that just sets us up even more for a very fast rise in silver to play catch up. And that's what I think it'll do. I mean, I think now you're looking at, once you get over $35.50, you're looking at $40 silver, $44 silver pretty fast. And of course, once you get through $50, well, you know, I mean, at that point, silver will have gotten over its 1980 high. See, gold got over its 1980 high a long time ago. Silver never has, and that's been an argument against silver. Well,
in nominal dollars, not in real dollars.
Right. Well, I know, but people think in nominal dollar terms. So, in any event, once that happens, it's going to be silver will go crazy. But the ratio went up, and it just made a correction, and it all looks good to me. I mean, it didn't do it. What I'm saying is that gold and silver have not done anything. Silver has not done anything out of the way. There have been no bad surprises here. And this kind of correction is perfectly predictable. The only thing that might happen, and the only thing that makes me a little bit nervous, because there's a rule that a gap in a chart is always filled, and there's a... Excuse me just now. I've got to sneeze. I'm sorry. There's a little gap in the chart up around 57, so... We might see, you know, we might see something happen that would take it up to there before it really turns around and starts rising. But that's a questionable. I'm not I don't much have my eyes on that. I don't think it'll be a big deal. Then we look at the stocks. As you know, both the Dow and the S&P, well, all the indices, just really took a beating after Obama's election. Losing $328 points in one day, which was huge. It was like 2.28%, which is an enormous move. It fell through the established support. It fell through the 200-day moving average. This is just about as negative as you can get.
And the interesting thing about that is completely contradicts the historical pattern, which is if the incumbent wins, you get a rising stock market between election day and the end of the year. So right now this contradicts history.
Well, and there may be another rise back. The big formation that we're seeing in the stock market is called a broadening top, or some people call it the jaws of death. And you've now had a broadening top form within a broadening top. And so it's perfectly possible that even from here, stocks could rally back up to, 13,300, maybe even 13,400, before they go down further. Because the nature of a broadening top, think of a megaphone. And so you get slightly higher highs, but you're getting lower lows at the same time. And eventually it falls through the bottom of that. It goes way on down. The more dramatic change than in the, I mean, as dramatic as that change in the Dow is, there's been a hugely, hugely dramatic change in the Dow measured in gold. And that broke down yesterday and today to new lows. That's going a lot lower. It's going, but right now it's about 7.4 ounces of gold to buy the whole Dow. That's going down to 2.1 or 2. Not tomorrow, but before the whole bull market is done. And it started the next phase of that move. As you noted, gold had been outperforming, or stocks had been outperforming gold and silver all year long, and they pretty well, they had. And that's when you see that. Dow in gold ratio rise, but it's broken down now. There's no question about that. So,
well, it's U.S. stocks, not global stocks, because Europe and Asia have been hammered.
Stocks have done worse than, if that's what you mean. Yeah, they've done much worse than the U.S. stocks. And actually, there are only two stock indices, the S&P and Dow, are the only two in the world in the last year or so that have been actually risen.
The thing that concerns me is if you look at the patterns of the quantitative easings, what happens is as the Fed engineers quantitative easing, corporate earnings rise, and as corporate earnings rise, the U.S. equity markets rise, and it's amazing to watch the pattern. And so you see corporate earnings rise, you see gold rise, and then it kind of trades in tandem. And the reality is if you look at where corporate earnings are, they've risen, they've topped, and if anything, they're projected to come down. and the pressure on corporations now to produce more earnings under difficult circumstances as best is very high. And of course, what's the first thing they do to generate more earnings? They lay people off. So the pressure from investors is very much, you know, the message to boards of directors is we want you to lay more people off, hitting the same time when spending cuts could be trickling down through federal, state, and local government. And in fact, if you look at the most recent employment statistics, it's been the government jobs that have turned net negative, which, you know, and they've been picking up a lot of the slack for quite some time, just growing more and more government. Of course, that's part of our issue with government expense in this country, because we keep adding employment when, in fact, we don't, you know, we don't need government to be doing that. It can be done with far less people. So, you know, it's you're seeing this sort of destruction of employment go on in the economy. And the question is, where does it end? Exactly.
I mean, how bad does it get before people grab their pitchforks and rakes and march on Washington?
Well, you and I were talking earlier today about the misallocation of capital, because the problem is you're engineering the death of many, many businesses that are economic and funneling capital to businesses that really don't make economic sense. And so I always liken it to the blood circulating in a body, where you're sending all the blood to the toes and starving the heart, the lungs, and the brain. It makes no sense, but that's what we're doing. So it centralizes, but it doesn't build wealth. Well, let me ask you a couple of questions, because we have a lot of good questions tonight. One that's more chart-oriented. Please educate me. The stock charts for gold, silver, and gold, silver ratio on the August 20th show just before the MACD for gold and silver. Also, the gold, silver ratio has MACD around this time. It looks like it would have been a great time to purchase both gold and silver when the MACD was positive. My previous understanding has been to purchase stocks when the MACD was positive and sell stocks when the MACD was negative. I understand if the gold-silver ratio is low, closer to 50, then use my silver to purchase gold, or if the ratio is high, closer to 60, then use my gold to purchase silver. What is the proper way to view the MACD as related to the gold-silver ratio and the relationship to swapping between gold and silver?
You know, I think about so many other things that I don't ever think about the moving average convergence, divergence in relation to the gold-silver ratio. I'll be honest. I don't really put that. So I can't say anything, because I know that right now probably the top of the range is about 59, and the bottom of the range is like 32. But I also superimpose on that the historical range, and the historical range, I think the next fall that we get will take us down to either 30 or 28, because there's, you know, I don't know why that in the mystery of history that charts tend to return to places that they've been 40, 50 years ago, but they do. And so I think you're going to see that fall. And what I'm going to do, I'm not quite that sophisticated. I just get a target and I get out at that target. And so I haven't looked at what the MACD's been doing, so I just have to go back and look in the past and see what it's done.
Okay, so here's a more difficult one. Even though I believe that Romney would not have done anything different from Obama, I still feel worried, disappointed, and a bit shell-shocked that Mr. Obama was elected. I'm concerned about where the next 4 years go. Where do you think our country will be in 4 years, and what are the advantages and opportunities that we can pursue? Thanks. P.S. I'm working on unplugging from the system and keeping my family's health strong. No GMOs, no vaccines. Stay inside when the chemtrails are spraying. Don't have a TV and try to keep a positive mindset.
Well, not having a TV will help that a lot.
Yes, it will.
You don't have to be exposed to that stuff. So the question is, what's going to happen the next 4 years?
What's going to happen the next 4 years, and where are the advantages and opportunities that someone can pursue?
Well, you know, I think for people who think independently and for people who can disconnect themselves and their income from the whole system, I think they're going to be huge opportunities, because what you're seeing is that this system that runs on government money is breaking down. It's going slower and slower and slower. And so if you can somehow or the other get outside of that into a business where you don't depend on government money, and the only thing you have to offer is excellence and competence, you're going to shine. It's going to be easy to make a living. Now, it's going to be more frustrating, because heaven only knows what kind of additional regulations and taxes that they're going to throw at us, and that will be bad. There'll be, you know, you'll see more of that annoying police state, you know, checkpoints on the road and, you know, stopping everybody when you go to work, and you've got to have a compulsory ID card and all of that stuff. There'll be a lot more of that. But, like I say, the day after the stock market crash in 1929, somebody got up and needed breakfast, and somebody got paid to cook it for them. So there are going to be those opportunities, and you just have to keep your eyes open for them. I
always talk about it. One of the most fascinating things is I went back to see who made money and was successful in the Great Depression, and it's amazing how many businesses got going in the Great Depression. But they really, yeah, it's amazing, because first of all, they had great labor available.
So, yeah, and people really put to work. Yeah, sure. But
well, it's funny.
Risks, big risks. Then
what I do find, Franklin, is you have a world. I see it more and more, and sometimes I've said to groups of entrepreneurs looking for investment, I've said, look, there are two economies in this country. One is entrepreneurial wealth, family wealth, people who make their money, you know, one nickel and dime at a time. And they may have hundreds of millions of dollars, but they understand the value of a dime. And then there's the, you know, sort of government money, bubble money. And, you know, it sounds to me like what you want is bubble money, and you're coming to the wrong place. You need to come to a place where, you know, every penny counts. And I still think many, many people are in that bubble mentality, but whether they want to or not, they're going to have the opportunity to shift over the next 4 years. And I think that is an opportunity for people who want to build something in the real economy. So,
again, that real economy, what you're seeing here is an epochal shift from that old economy to a new economy where competence is going to matter, and not connections with the government, and not connections to government money. And if you can do it now, if in this hostile environment you can make a success out of any business, then you'll find it easy 10 years from now.
Yeah, I know the person who asked the question, and they've got a pack of great kids. And one thing I would say, because they're out in California, is get your kids over to a Maker Faire. Do you know what a Maker Faire is, Franklin? It's spelled fair, like F-A-I-R-E, like the Middle Ages. And we had Dale Dougherty, who's the editor of Make Magazine, on the Salieri Report earlier this year. There's a whole phenomena coming out of the San Francisco Bay Area where you create hacker spaces where you have shared tools. And in fact, there's a business now popping up. I just toured one called Tech Shop, where you can go and literally, you know, you can have 3D printers, you can have lasers, you can have welding equipment. It's a huge shop where you can start to make and design and prototype and manufacture your own stuff. And anyway, it's called the Maker Movement, and they have Maker Faires where makers get together and share, you know, all their knowledge and ideas. And it goes from things that are very low tech, like doll making, to very high tech with people making their own robots. And so there's quite a huge range. But one of the things that's great about it is it's getting young people educated and learning about how to make things themselves. And if you look at the new manufacturing and fabrication tools, the costs of doing things for ourselves are coming down dramatically. And the ability for small business to now grab these tools and start bringing manufacturing and all sorts of other stuff down even to the local and regional level is phenomenal. but it takes the knowledge and skills. So it's critical that the young people get involved and interested. And so I would say one thing I would definitely do in the next year, not wait for the next 4 years, is, you know, pick up your kids and go hang out at a maker fair. They're all over the world now. So, you know, it's a phenomenon that's kind of exploding. I just think there's going to be tremendous opportunities to learn how to make things for ourselves. Okay, next question. And you're going to faint when I ask you this, Franklin. One question that I don't remember ever coming up between you and Franklin is a deeper discussion on the issue of gold confiscation. What is your assessment of the likelihood of gold confiscation in your slow burn or more extreme collapse scenario? And would this also apply equally to silver? And then he goes on to talk about FDR's gold confiscation. Now, before Franklin says a word, what I will tell you is we've discussed this numerous times. And if you go to the Precious Metals Market Report Library, you'll find under – just do a search for the word confiscation. You'll find several times when we dedicated almost a whole Salieri report to talking about confiscation. But in a nutshell, Franklin, why don't you take a go at that, and I will too.
Well, in a nutshell, this is not 1934. That's the best reply I can give. And let me explain to you. I'm not being smart, Alec. I'm just saying, why did Roosevelt do that in 1934? He did that because he planned to inflate. And at that time, he had to have gold to, because of the way the laws were structured, even for the Federal Reserve to create money, he had to have gold. And so he... it's, quote, confiscated gold, and the whole thing was completely illegal and let alone unconstitutional. The law that he purportedly did it under had already expired. So that was part of his plan to inflate the money supply. That's why he wanted the gold. And he actually seized silver, too. Most people don't know that, but He was paying 50 cents when the market rate was about 38 cents, and so nobody was arguing with him when he seized the silver. So, but he never got around to using silver certificates as an instrument of inflation the same way he did with the gold and spending money through government projects. So this is not 1934. Gold no longer forms any part of the reserves in the monetary system. And whatever you think about the insiders, the people who run the world, they may be evil, and evil is by definition stupid, but they don't always act stupid. They're very clever. Why would they stir up all that trouble for a very small gain? And the very small gain is whatever amount of gold they would get. And the people who own gold, let me tell you, after 32 years' experience dealing with these people, I'm not going to go try to pry their gold out of their hands. They're going to fight you. It's just that simple. They're going to fight you. And, you know, they'll find a way to fight you. They'll fight you legally or they'll hide. They'll figure out a way to fight. So I think as a practical matter, it would be almost impossible to enforce. And it would have the opposite effect. It would send the price up. It would make gold a black market commodity and double or triple the price overnight. Just as it used to trade back when it was $600-$700 in the United States, it used to trade the Soviet Union for $2,400 an ounce. So this is not 1934, and again, the purpose of the confiscation in 1934 cannot be fulfilled in 2012. So I just don't think they're going to do it. Far, far more likely is they'll say, you know, we're looking here at this $16 trillion pool of wealth that we can get our hands on, which is all of those IRAs, 401Ks, maybe some pension funds thrown in there. And what we're going to do is make a law. After all, they control what you can put in an IRA, 401K, make a law that you have to invest X percentage in government bonds, U.S. government debt. And they will have effectively locked it up and stolen it from you. So that's what's more likely in my mind than the other. And then I don't know where you're going to go next, but I'll just wait and let you comment.
Well, I agree. I mean, I think, you know, it's what Willie Horton said, you go where the money is. So the money's not in gold. It's in the 401ks and the IRAs. And so I think those are much prettier to pluck. And to me, if you try and confiscate gold, you just take on a whole bunch of irascible people and you don't get much money. Now, given how leveraged gold is, I could see why they'd want to bring some in, but there are other better ways to do it. I put a post on the blog last week about a freighter that was carrying gold from one place to another, disappearing. And somebody got quite a stash with that one. So, I think the pressure's on, but I don't see that as likely. The thing that concerns me a lot more, Franklin, is as you see the effort to get states to adopt gold and silver as legal tender and all sorts of things to sort of build an infrastructure to roll out something at a retail level with gold. My biggest fear is we wake up one day and suddenly gold is embraced by the powers that be. And the next thing you know, the average person who's got, and this is sort of the radical debasement scenario, where the average person has their dollars have suddenly declined dramatically in value, and they're being called upon to pay their local property taxes or their carbon tax and precious metals. So, you know, my concern is more the risk of going the other way, which is most people don't have gold and silver, and yet the values get switched suddenly and they're hurt by it.
Well, you're presupposing. Yeah, go ahead. Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Well, but I just think confiscation is not, it doesn't buy you anything. It doesn't buy you the kind of things they want. And I've said it many times, if you look at where this is all going, I think that Mr. Global is promoting the general adoption of gold and silver because after you've used fiat currency to steal everything, you want to shift to sound currency. And my fear is the shift to sound currency using gold and silver, whether it's at the retail level or the IMF level, will disadvantage the average person. So I wouldn't worry about confiscation of your gold and silver down the road. If you look at the numbers on debasement of the dollars, your wealth is being confiscated right now today. I mean, we've had significant confiscation every day for the last 20 years. And that's what we need to be worried about because that is the slow burn. That's the predominant, you know, so I'm most concerned about protecting people against, you know, the 100% guaranteed confiscation that they're living with right now. And gold and silver is one of the few ways to do that. So, you know, but we live in a world, you know, if you put up drones and everything else, we live in a world where our minds can be confiscated, our bodies can be confiscated, our gold can be confiscated. And I'm a lot more worried about our minds and bodies being confiscated than the gold.
Right. Well, you're presupposing the same thing that I presuppose, which is that in the end, they must return to a gold standard because they've played the inflationary game as long as it can be played. And so at some point, not necessarily soon, in fact, probably not soon, that will happen. And there are reasons to think, there are several reasons to think that they're already beginning to promote that alternative. Because, you know, the standard on the International Banking Standards Commission, whatever the name of it, is that meets at the BIS and Basel has recommended that gold be moved from a Tier 3 asset valued at 50% to a Tier 1 asset valued at 100% in bank reserves. And the Federal Reserve sent out a letter to member banks asking for comments on that. So right there, you know, that's a way that you're talking about bringing gold back into the system.
Right.
If you allow it to be not only bank reserves, but Tier 1 bank reserves valued at 100% of market. So
right.
I think that's the long-term deal, but between then and now, there'll be an enormous confiscation by inflation. So.
Right. Let me add a couple more good questions. I inherited a part interest in a parcel of rangeland. The other heirs want to liquidate this year. The period under a sale contract could last months. I'm nervous about holding what is effectively a sizable futures contract to buy dollars. I worry about a downdraft or holiday in the purchasing power of the U.S. dollar while in contract. Have you suggestions for how to eliminate or hedge that risk? Is my worry unwarranted? Call options on gold futures are only as good as the integrity and solvency of the exchanges and brokerages that float them. Okay, now I've got a strong opinion on this, but I'll let you go first.
Well, so there's a period of time when they're going to be clear in the sale. Is that it?
I'm presuming that they'll lock in a sale, but it will be a while before the closing. So between you lock in a dollar price and the closing, you've got some period of time that could last months.
Right. Well, you know, if they're worried about that, clearly brokerage firms are no longer reliable because of what happened with Man Financial and so forth. So, but they're the only thing you've got. You know, it's the only game in town. So one of the things that you might do, I would not be in favor of options on the dollar or the dollar index. More I would favor buying options on silver or on gold if I wanted to hedge it that way. But the problem with the dollar is that it's just so manipulated that, you know, you can be absolutely right, and from a technical standpoint, the chart will say one thing, and then they wake up one morning and they've got a political heartburn, and they go the other way. So it's very unpredictable, whereas I'm very comfortable about the longer term trend of silver and gold.
Well, let me take a shot at this, because I'm comfortable with brokerages. I'm not comfortable with futures, because if you break down and look at what happened in MF Global and a couple of the others, there's a distinct difference between what happens in the brokerages and what happens in the futures. But put that aside. I think the lesson is it's very important the quality of the people you do business with. And if the former chairman of Goldman Sachs takes over the firm where your brokerage account is, you really need to move it. But put that aside. I think if your closing is going to be in the next year and a half, I wouldn't worry. I think there are more ways to get yourself in trouble trying to hedge it and the complexity of hedging. And I think the dollar is going to be relatively strong for some period of time here. Just as it's been strong in the last couple of weeks. So the dollar's been strong this year. And I think if you look at what's going on globally, it's scheduled to be relatively strong in the next year. So I've seen people in the last 2 years sort of run up their expenses and nightmare trying to do these kinds of things. And I would just keep it simple and get the thing closed as quickly as possible. But I wouldn't worry about the dollar in the short run. Now, I hope I'm wrong.
Sometimes you can write something into a contract, a sales contract, for instance, if you're concerned about the time lag in closing, then one of the things that you ought to put in the contract is we don't want a long time lag. We want to close within 30 days or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And eliminate it that way. But just a general statement about hedging that people don't seem to realize is you always lower your profit when you hedge by the cost of the hedge, if nothing else. So hedging is not cost-free. It caps your profits by the cost of the hedge. And if there's a loss on the hedge, then by the cost plus the loss.
We got a very good question about mining companies and how mining companies trade. And I'm not gonna respond tonight, but I wrote a note to Paul Ferguson, who's my favorite mining investor and mining stock investor, and asked him if he would write a little blog post about it, which he did, and we'll post it tomorrow. It'll be up on the subscriber-only part of the Solari Report. And he also sent a great chart that sort of shows the behavior of sort of stock valuations as the company moves from startup through the different phases of development of a mining company. And that's up with the charts that Franklin sent in in the subscriber space. Another question that I got a week ago about the Benghazi situation, I've researched it, I've looked into it. There's clearly a story there, but trying to get the truth is probably impossible. Interesting, though, a comment posted about it on Blackwater's website. They came out with a very definitive position, and I think I posted it at the blog. So if you want to take a look, check out the statement about Benghazi at the Blackwater site. Another question, Franklin, although we've covered a little bit of this, by the time you do your session, you will know the election results. Do you see the election result as impacting the precious metals markets?
Well, they did positively. And they might have, you know, if Romney had been elected, there might have been a transient negative effect. But the thing that you have to realize is that this was already priced into the market. I mean, the correction that I spoke of that's been going on for 14 months, that was already there, and that was going to work itself out. So it wouldn't have mattered much who was going to be elected. I think maybe Obama's election caused it to rise a little sooner than Romney's would have, but I think it was priced in anyway.
I think that it was not so much who won, but I think the election process combined with other things that have been going on over the last 30 days has really been a very sobering experience for America. And it doesn't surprise me you're getting a significant flow of purchasing. I think people are looking for a way to, you know, to get their hands on a store of value that they can put in their pocket and walk down the road if they need to. So I think they're starting to realize the fundamental or the speed of change that's coming. And so I think it's going to educate more people to the role that precious metals plays. So I think, you know, QE3 and the election are both going to be, I think they're both building to help create the kind of primary trend that you're talking about earlier this evening. Okay, quickly, question about how to find a financial institution for CDs. We have a Bank Intimate page with a really great little article on how to find a great local bank. Another question about Robert Holmes is completely dropped off the radar. That's a reference to the father-son team, or the son who was arrested for the shootings in Denver, the father being involved with the computer programming with some pretty sensitive financial computer programming. My guess is that's dropped off the radar because the sort of goals of that operation weren't achieved. The result is Americans have become much more dug in about the importance of owning a gun. And so I think that really has dropped off the radar, and I think it's going to stay off the radar. A couple more questions that we don't have time to address, but again, thank you for a lot of really great questions. One more question on the what can I do, what are the advantages and opportunities? I would just, we're going to repost the article that we wrote called Coming Clean, which is 21 steps you can take to kind of start building an authentic life, not getting drained by Mr. Global and your television set. So we'll put that up on the blog. And also on the blog, we regularly post things on new technology. And I do see a lot happening, as well as the crowdfunding, the coming changes in crowdfunding. The SEC is going to promulgate regulations in 2013 for permitting crowdfunding to be used to do private equity and allow non-accredited investors to start investing in their local businesses. Right now, if I'm, you know, in my county, it's pretty easy to buy hard narcotics or to put money in the lottery, but it's illegal to invest in a local business, and God help me if I try and do it in a liquid form. So hopefully that's going to get rebalanced in 2013. It turns out, Franklin, that for the first 8 minutes of the Salieri Report tonight, the music was playing instead of people hearing me. So after we get to the end tonight, I'm going to repeat the first 8 minutes, and you're perfectly free to not hold on as I do it. But before you go, let me just mention our Let's Go to the Movies this evening was a very interesting documentary. This is something that I think is probably not at the, you know, on the top 100 at Netflix, But it's a 1995 documentary made about a New Zealand legislator named Marilyn Waring, who's a very interesting character. It's called Who's Counting Marilyn Waring on Sex, Lies, and Global Economics. Actually, Franklin, they've got this now. You can rent it on the internet for, I think, $4.95. And it's very interesting. And I'll tell you the story. I saw it. We have a very brilliant subscriber who dug it out and sent it to me many years ago. Marilyn Waring became the youngest legislator in New Zealand. She got elected at the age of 23. And it turns out she's quite good at budgeting and money. And she got herself on the committees involved with the budget and the public expenditure committee. And then she also got on the foreign affairs committee. And being a numbers person, she dug and really dug into sort of how the money works in the budget, the federal budget in New Zealand, and stayed on. She was elected several times, including from a different district, and finally realized that a lot of the really crazy things that were happening in terms of government policy and money were as the result of international law. And so she decided, after she decided to leave the legislature, she decided to take a consultancy and go to the UN and dig into their budget rules and laws and figure out, you know, why you had these rules coming down from on high that caused the legislature to behave in irrational ways. So sure enough, she ended up at the UN digging in and digging in and digging in. And what did she discover? Can you guess?
There's a program somewhere. There's an outline. I already know.
Yes, Virginia. Yes, Virginia, there is a conspiracy. In other words, this drive to centralize and make rules that centralize in a way that's destructive of building real wealth was really a plan. So that at the end of the documentary, she goes back to New Zealand and becomes a sheep farmer and says, oh, I give up on this. Well, it turns out after, you know, sheep farming is very hard to do. So she ended up getting her PhD in, I think, public economics or something, and is now teaching in New Zealand. But anyway, so the documentary ends with her on the sheep farm. But it's a very interesting little slice of budgeting, sort of global budgeting history, which is a very good little piece of the jigsaw puzzle to put under your hat as we start to discuss through 2013 the fiscal cliff and what's going on with the federal budget, because the New Zealand budget is just a sort of tiny version of the same thing. And the greatest line from Waring in her discussion is she calls attention to the construct of the budget being, are you ready for this, Franklin? This is a great description. I want you to hold on to this one. Quote, chronically malevolent. Chronically, the budget rules are chronically malevolent. I could not agree more. Marilyn Waring, thank you for your great work coming out of New Zealand. Okay. Well, Franklin, before we close, anything else you want to add about what you think is coming up and what to expect in the next month?
In the next month? Well, I think
in the next month,
gold and silver to rise from here to the end of the year, because the pattern, the yearly pattern is, if you get a low in October, you get a rise into the end of the year. If you get a low in November, you get a rise in the rest of the year. And we've seen this dramatic low and turnaround, so I think it's probably pretty well going to keep going up. But could I say one other thing, too, about
Absolutely.
Between now and the end of the year? Your readers have time between now and the end of the year to go to my website, themoneychanger.com, the-moneychanger.com, and buy a copy of my new book, At Home in Dogwood Mudhole.
Now, I just have to say, I was one of the first people to read this book. And it is fantastic. You have got to read this book, and I'll tell you why. But first, you describe it.
Well, Joel Salatin said it's at once hilarious, humbling, and holy. And I guess that's true. You know, it is. It's just about our moving out to the farm. It's kind of like the Nine Stooges move and go to the farm, because we didn't know anything about what we were doing. And it's just, it changed our whole lives. You know, living out here changed our lives. And it's been a wonderful, it's been the best move that Susan and I ever made since, you know, we've been married. So anyway, it's funny too. That's the main thing. It's funny. I mean,
well, what you
can't
do?
Read about...
Yeah.
I was just going to say, you can't really read about those horses running away with Justin, even though it endangered his life. I still see him standing up with his hair streaming behind him, looking like Ben Hur on this 16-foot wagon. Horses running away with him. So anyway, between now and Christmas, you can order yourself a copy of that. And if you like it, you got time to order one for as a Christmas gift, too.
The what this is a collection of all the different things you've written about life in Dogwood Mudhole, Tennessee, that you've published in The Money Changer. So you've collected them all up and put them in one place. And I think the thing I love about it is, to me, it's really about the process of leaving the bubble economy or the government money economy and going out and trying to do something economically relevant. Of course, the way you learn how to do something economically relevant is you try things and you fail and you succeed and you fail and you just keep trying. And it's a faith walk, because you've got to keep building your learning until you get it right enough to really make it work. You know, because starting a good successful business takes about 5 years, and that's, you know, that's five painful years when you learn about what's wrong. And what you describe, and you do it very beautifully, is you describe that faith walk. And it doesn't matter what business you're starting. You know, just reading you going through the terrible times, and then some little good thing will happen, and through it you have a light of where the opportunity really, you know, so the doors keep opening, but not without lots of pain. And you feel the faith walk of doing that. And I think no matter what your business is, or you know, trying to leave the sort of Mr. Globally controlled world and go build something authentic, I think it's really I think it gives a lot of understanding and a lot of wisdom to somebody who's walking through that process. And before this is over, Franklin, I think millions of us are going to walk through this process. So I really commend you. Now, I also forgot to ask you to just say a word about Transformation and Renewals, which was the conference we had in Tennessee last month, talking a little bit about the same question. So did you want to give us 2 minutes on that as well?
Well, you know, I told you I was afraid we were bringing together people of such vastly different backgrounds and understandings that we might have a great time, or we might end up having about six or eight cuttings and shootings. But as it turned out, everybody just set aside their differences, and they opened up to each other, and it was just amazing. It was amazing how much I learned listening to them. And, you know, one of the reasons that you and I did this was because we wanted people to know they weren't alone, that there were other competent, entrepreneurial, sane people in the world besides them. And we got out there, and lo and behold, there are a whole lot of them.
There are a whole lot.
Yeah, and they're just great people. So I had a wonderful time. It was pretty exhausting, but and I haven't seen anybody who said, "Boy, this was the biggest waste of money and time I ever been to." Everybody liked it. Everybody that came really got something out of it.
My favorite time of transformation.
Go ahead. No.
My favorite time of transformations was there's a young man we have in our subscriber base who's just a terrific, terrific young man. But he's always looking fretful and nervous. He's very handsome, but he's just always looking fretful and nervous. So he came, and Saturday night he walked in, and there was not an ounce of nervousness or fretting. He just looked happy as a clam. He looked perfectly relaxed. And I said to him, what in the world happened? And he said, for the first time, I'm with people who I don't have to lie to, and I can be myself, and they're really positive and interesting. It was as though for the first time he was safe because he was among like-minded, a critical mass of like-minded people. And that's what I saw, was how much they enjoyed just being for a couple days with people who knew what was going on but were very positively oriented. And just having that little community for a weekend, you know, it did something. So, yeah, so, you know, if there's any message that came out of that, it's for heaven's sakes, the people are there. We just have to find each other. So,
well, that's exactly right. We just have to find each other. Yeah.
So, okay, well, Franklin, thank you. Thank you so much. I know you had a lot of tickets to write today. I know you're going to have a busy day tomorrow, so we appreciate your taking the time to join us and do the Precious Metals Market Report.
I'm glad to do it. You have a wonderful time in Holland.
I will. Okay, in closing, coming up November 15th, A Passion for Privacy with Spy Chips author Catherine Albrecht. And she's been part of filming a new DVD, Shadow Government, which will be our movie. Very, very much worth getting and watching. We will be off for Thanksgiving on November 22nd, but we will be back on November 29th with John Rappaport. John Rappaport is going to be recording The Covert Engineering of Information. And then December 6th, a very important Salieri Report. Mark your calendars. Chuck Gibson, Melanie Paleo, the team at Sealand Advisory with me, will be doing one on your taxes in 2013. Given what's happened with the election and how fluid tax policy is with the fiscal cliff, I think that's really important. A lot of people are going to be looking hard at whether or not they take investment gains or do other things. So until November 15th, when we're back with Catherine Albrecht next week, please don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck. Okay, so for those of you who want to hear the first 8 minutes of the Salieri Report, unfortunately, I apologize, one of our computers froze. And so you got music for the first 8 minutes. Obviously, when we put up the MP3 file tonight or tomorrow, the first 8 minutes will be recorded, so you'll have it there. But let me just do it again and now for those who want to get it tonight. So are you ready? Here we go. Good evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today is November 8th, 2012. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I'm speaking to you from the Amsterdam area in Holland, where I'm surrounded by physicists and engineers. I'm attending and speaking at the Global Breakthrough Energy Conference. The link to access the live stream will be up on the blog starting tomorrow, where you can link to it from the blog. And so if you want to be part of the conversation, you can. From the conversations I've already had at dinner tonight and our meetings this evening, it's a reminder that the technology is available to radically reduce our energy and healthcare costs. This stuff really does exist. Scientists and engineers can add dramatically to our general welfare if they're permitted. Of course, they haven't been permitted. The question has been, what are the political obstacles and how do we get them to change? But the possibility is there. And in theory, it's one of the most exciting things that could be happening in the next 4 years. I'm always saying there's a world that's being born. There's a world that's dying and there's a world that's being born. And if you spend time looking at the world that's being born, actually, there's a lot of very exciting things going on. Other upcoming events, I'll be flying back to California on Monday. And then on November 14th, we have the last of four Financial Salons for Changing Time in Santa Cruz. I would encourage you to come out. Those have been wonderful discussions. And then December 1st, we'll have our next subscribers luncheon. The whole Soleri team will be in Murfreesboro outside of Nashville, Tennessee. If you click on the Lunch with Catherine on the blog, you can sign up. We need you to sign up because we need an accurate account. Tonight, Precious Metals Market Report with Franklin Sanders. Check out the slides on the webinar software. We have slides running so that you can tell what different section we're in as we go. And then Franklin has sent us a lot of charts for the gold and silver discussion, and those charts are not on the webinar software. They're on the blog post in the subscriber-only space. So log into the blog and definitely check out the charts that we've posted for this evening's discussion. Our theme tonight is Arise When the Storm Passes and Rebuilds. It's an a reference to a new commentary I have. It's short, sweet, up on the blog. It's called Yea, Though I Walk Through the Valley of the Shadow of Death, and it's a reference to the events around Hurricane Sandy. We've had multiple storms, not just Hurricane Sandy and the continuing storms in the tri-state area, but also we've had the European and U.S. fiscal cliffs, and I would describe the presidential campaign as absolutely a storm rolling over us. Money and markets, I like to start with good news. The good news is McDonald's sales are down. So some might say, well, that's because of the economy. I'm hoping that Americans have decided that given the economic woes, they can't afford to eat food that's not food. The other good news is the election is over. The election, in my opinion, was a very depressing experience. The majority of voters were once again tricked into ignoring local elections and the issues really important to them and sucked into spending enormous amounts of time and attention and money on a presidential election only to wake up the day after with a serious case of dread about what's next. The symptoms of voter fraud were quite significant with the latest report of significant military absentee ballots not arriving in time to be counted. So I guess you know where the Pentagon stood on this. My read is that Obama won the election in late July at the Bohemian Grove. If you look at QE3 and the financial aspects of Hurricane Sandy, those things would have had to be decided with high-level consensus in the summer. I think several things won Obama the nod for Mr. Global. First of all, he's given Mr. Global everything he wanted and more. If you look at Panetta and the Department of Defense and sort of the Vatican interests behind them, they're in the catbird seat. There's no need to rock the boat. You have a lot going on right now. If you have a turnover between an incumbent and a new administration coming in, there's a lot of time lost and a lot of money and risk from the turnover, especially because with a new guy having done whatever you wanted him to do, why take the risk of moving into a new guy? I think the a Romney presidency, there was going to be greater chance of what I call the Minionite thing happening, not just domestically, but globally. Finally, Romney, I believe, said no to George Shultz et al. At the Grove, who were promoting Condoleezza Rice as a potential vice president candidate. If you're doing what the American empire is doing with war and genocide around the world, it's good to have a black or brown face on the front of that machine. Romney's just the wrong look to put in front of launching drones all over the world in America. People are much more inclined to balk. The majority of the population is going to be much more complacent with Obama, who is somebody who looks more like them. Given the pain that's being caused by the American empire, Obama is a what I would call a velvet face to an iron fist. The other thing I thought was very telling, and we talked about it on the Soleri Report at the time, and it was around the, I believe it's about the time of the Grove. The Financial Times poll of money managers globally felt that the markets would do significantly better under Obama. So I think in part it was a style choice. It's what I call the Ninja Turtles versus the Lone Rangers. Obama's a much more collaborative global kind of character, whereas Romney's much more from the Lone Ranger style. The other thing, it's a color choice. White voters are declining as a percent of the voting population. And so you have Hispanic rising, you have African-American rising, you have Asian rising. And I think that that Romney just didn't reach out. The Republicans haven't reached out and been a more inclusive group. One of the things that was very positive, good news coming out of the election, is that entrainment technology and subliminal programming and its use in political applications has now gone mainstream. I had pointed out to me by one subscriber that Doonesbury by Gary Trudeau in the syndicated column comic strip has last week had several people lying around in their house talking about the election. A truck goes by promoting the Romney campaign. They start talking about how much they hate Romney. Suddenly a beam flies out of the little sort of van driving around the neighborhood. Everybody gets this wonky look on their face and suddenly starts talking about they can't remember what they were talking about. And they start holding their head and saying, "Dear God." So it's quite amazing when this stuff gets into the comic strips. But at least that's one good news coming out of the election. Elizabeth Warren won in Massachusetts. That adds one sane financial voice to the U.S. Senate. The interesting thing is the reason the banks now have to contend with Senator Warren is because they did everything they could to stop her from being appointed to the head of the consumer agency. I'm sure she's going to be much more effective and have more power as a senator. So that's some good news. California approved Governor Brown's tax plan for the schools. That was one of the referendums. Unfortunately, they said no to Proposition 37, which was the effort to get GMO labeling. That's too bad. Puerto Rico voted to become a state. It doesn't mean they're going to become a state, but the process is moving whereby they could end up with statehood or changing their legal status. Okay, there's the first 8 minutes. If you have held on, ladies and gentlemen, again, good night and good luck.